ask us for a favor. They kick us out.
All right, we need quiet now. We're going to record.
You're now tuned in to San Quentin's Ear Hustle from Radiotopia.
The following podcast contains language that may not be appropriate for all listeners.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Having spent all my adult life in the Marine Corps, Special Forces, been in combat, raised in military schools, I felt, prison, how bad can that be?
That's Ron Self, an inmate at San Quentin. He's serving 25 years to life for attempted murder and conspiracy to commit murder.
He's been locked up for 20 years. His first stop was Corcoran, a level 4 maximum security state prison in California.
We arrive on the bus, then we get off, we go through processing, and part of processing is it's the reception area where they issue you your state blues and whatnot. And I meet this guy, he's Native American like myself, and his name's Duck, and I stick my hand out. He may as well spit on me. This guy's just evil. I mean, he scared the shit out of me. And it not often that things or people scare me, but this man actually scared me.
Ron was in receiving and release, or R&R, which is basically the intake into the prison system. It's where you get your ID card and your prison number, which will follow you through your whole incarceration. And it's where you go through a litany of questions to find out where you'll be housed.
It just felt like the whole time I was in R&R, this guy wanted to kill me. And I was like, I couldn't get processed fast enough to get out of R&R. So they finished processing me out. I go to the building, which is like a mile long walk in chains, guns out on the rails. And electronic door opens. I walk into the building. The door closes behind me. And then another door, I hear it pop open. And that's the cell I'm going to. And the door opens all the way. And it's Duck. The guy that's looking at me like he wants to kill me. And my heart dropped. They said, go into that cell and close the door behind you. Okay, I can deal with this. But no matter what I did in the cell, it was wrong. I mean, he would yell, he would scream, he threatened to kill me. I would sleep with my back to the wall and one eye open, if you would call what I did sleeping. And sometimes he would just get down out of the bed in the middle of the night screaming, acting like he's going to kill me. That 1 6-month period felt more like 60 years.
The moral of Ron Self's story? In prison, it matters who your cellmate is. I'm Earlonne Woods.
Earlonne is serving a 31-year-to-life sentence for attempted second-degree robbery, and he's the co-host and co-producer of Ear Hustle.
And that's Nigel Poor. She's a visual artist and works with incarcerated men here at San Quentin, and she's the co-producer and my co-host. And together, we're going to take you inside.
Earlonne, this is our first episode, so it's probably a good time to tell everybody what ear hustling means.
Ear hustling is prison slang for eavesdropping, listening in to something that may not be your business, and today we're going to hear about cellies.
It's a big deal in prison who your cellmate is, isn't it?
Huge. Ask anyone around here and they'll have a lot to say about their cellies.
We always wash our hands, wash your hands, man. No, you can't get into my chips.
That's what we're calling yard talk, when we take a microphone and ask a bunch of guys questions about whatever topic we're covering. We'll hear some more of that later.
San Quentin is not a maximum security prison.
Nope.
So that means we can spend the day working down here in the media lab.
Pretty much.
And obviously you're not in your cell all day, but you do have to spend time there. I've seen the cells here, but most people haven't. Can you explain how big they are?
How big is the cell? It is 4 feet by 9 feet. So if I got my back on one wall, I could touch the other one. And within that space, you have two bunks. You have a toilet and a sink that's side by side. You have two lockers, one locker above the top bunk, one locker in the back of the cell, and then each cellie has their appliances and property. I'll put it like this. You can't walk by each other. One person either got to sit on his bunk and the other person can walk by. It's like a little public storage.
You know, I hate to say it, I know I have seen closets that are bigger than that.
Of course.
Erlon, you've been thinking a lot about cellies recently, and not just because we're doing a show about them.
Right, because my cellie just got out of prison after serving 22 years, and we were cellies for like 3 years. And about a half hour to the hour after he left, they gave me a new cellie.
But it's possible your new cellie could be temporary if you find someone else you'd prefer.
Right, right.
I'm going to ask you about that later, but first we should say that sometimes guys at San Quentin can choose their cellies, right?
Usually they'll just throw someone in a cell with you, but they do have this thing called moves of convenience where you and another guy can go to the officer and say, hey, look, man, we're compatible. Can you move us together? And they'll do it. Like they did for the next guys we're about to hear from, Eddie and Emil. And here's Eddie.
I've been incarcerated for 20 years on a 26-to-life sentence. I've had some bad experiences with cellies, and I've had a situation where I got into a fight and stayed up. I had to stay up all night because didn't know if it was going to keep going, sleeping in the bed with my boots on.
I've been locked up for 20 years, since I was 18.
That's Emil. He's actually Eddie's younger brother.
2001, I'm in High Desert State Prison. I've been doing time for like 3 years at this point. And I'm in there with my brother, and I'm thinking to myself, we're brothers, we should live together, we should cell up, right?
For sure. I love my brother, and I wanted to be cellies with him because there was nobody else in the prison that I love that much, you know? Family sticks together, you know?
And in an environment where nothing is safe, right? And it's like, hey, what could be better and safer than that? Just, you know, living with your brother, right? So he moves into my cell.
I was happy. I kind of felt relieved, you know?
We did it!
To be able to just exhale, you know, just relax for a moment in prison.
That's like one of the biggest things in prison is you miss your family. So to be able to have your family with you is bittersweet, but it's still sweet.
So Eddie and Emil got what they wanted. They got to cell up together, but just like roommates on the outside, they still have to figure out how to live together. And it's smart to start thinking about this before you move into a tiny cell together.
So when I get a new cellie, the first thing that I look at first is what age they are, then what is their disposition. Because, you know, we have to have, I mean, you always look at it from the fact that I don't live in here.
The first few nights were great, and then it wasn't.
I didn't really know my brother like I thought I did.
He's still Seventh-day Adventist, right? And he's, like, devout. So the Sabbath, you're not supposed to watch television, but I watch television. But he didn't want to have to hear it because he didn't want to have to hear it on the Sabbath. So he asked me to use my headphones, right? Which was, in theory, wasn't like a horrible request, but my headphones are like 3 feet long, right? And the space between my bunk and my television is like 3 feet long, right? 3.5 feet. So I'm like on the corner of my bed with my head hanging off it. Man, I'm not going to do that.
He was watching soap operas. And soap operas was like a trigger for me because I remember hearing the Young and the Restless tune, dun, 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 and there'd be straight violence in the household, right? My father used to get on my mother and he would say, you watching them soaps and being a lazy, you know, woman and beat her up.
I didn't really understand what he was going through, right? I thought like he was just trying to convert me and make me observe the Sabbath and shit. So it just pissed me off, like, dude.
I was like, man, you need to change that channel.
Yeah, I'm a grown ass man. This is my television. I don't give a fuck how you feel about it.
And I was like, I can't believe you watching that soap, right? Really, bro?
And so he turns my television off, right? And I'm like, dude, back up. I turned the television back on, right? Like, I'm like, have you lost your mind?
The rule is don't touch my stuff. Don't look through my mail. Don't look at my pictures. Do not put your hands on my shelf. Because if you do, that's like the ultimate form of disrespect. Because it's
so he's pissed because, you know, in his mind, I'm not respecting his space and respecting his Sabbath. So, you know, he declares like a passive-aggressive war on me, and he stopped showering. And when I call him on not showering, right, he keeps bringing up this just watching television on the Sabbath shit, right? And I'm like, bro, in my mind, I'm getting hella frustrated because in my mind, I'm like, man, what the hell does one have to do with the other, man? You have to shower, man. It's not the same thing. So not only did he stop showering, but he stopped, like, using deodorant. He wasn't using deodorant because, you know, in my mind, I guess it just made the warfare more potent, right?
That is so not true.
But on the other hand, right, he does have this thing about, like, deodorant and, like, conspiracies of, like, chemicals and...
They say that aluminum and the antiperspirant deodorants and stuff will cause, like, memory loss or Alzheimer's when you get older. And I was like, why would I poison myself like that?
He wants to be natural, and it's just a natural smell, and what's the big deal? It's a big deal, let me tell you.
In such a tight space, Nigel, smells are a big deal.
Ugh, yeah, so I've heard.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Like, that was one of the reasons, like, I've never sailed with, like, a dude over, like, 250. Hey, because you know them, well, you know them bowel movements, boy, gonna light up everything. I remember we were sitting on the yard, right? We seen this one big old dude, right, walking by. And I'm like, man, can you imagine being in the cell with him when he's dropping the bomb?
Oh, another thing we argued about was smoking. I smoked.
I didn't smoke. And so he was smoking cigarettes. They were legal. They were selling us tobacco in the canteen. If you smoked, you would smoke and blow the smoke out the door and, or blow the smoke in the vent or blow the smoke in the toilet or something like that, right, to get rid of the smoke for your non-smoking cellie. And one day, I guess we had gotten to an argument. The next thing he said was, you know what? If I want to smoke, I'm going to smoke on my bunk. I ain't going to no door or nothing. He just lit up right there on the bunk.
So it wasn't really about fuck him. It was like... yeah, this is my moment. I need my space to have something in this place.
And I was like trying to hold it in. It was just eating at me. And then we just clashed in the cell.
And he was like, man, you're trying to kill me. You're killing me with this. You're going to kill me with cancer. And I would just kind of, I was very dismissive. Like, man, shut the fuck up with that shit, man. God, man, we are in prison for life. Like, you know, I have 67 years to life. You have 27 years to life, man. I am smoking this cigarette.
Neighbors in the prison, they was thinking that we was killing each other up in there, but it was just a bunch of yelling and screaming and shouting. But the dude next door, he kind of like was shouting incendiary things through the vent. It was like not homicide. It wasn't homicide. It wasn't genocide. But it was like
fratricide. And that used to make Eddie so mad, right? I thought it was kind of funny, right?
Wow, he's like going there, like killing your own brother. That's something I would never do. And now he's shouting this through the vent.
Fratricide, fratricide. Because Eddie felt like Bobo next door in actuality wanted us to kill each other, like literally. Like Eddie's can be a very literal man, right? The dude didn't expect us to murder each other, but you know.
When Bobo and my brother were talking in the vent, I assumed that Bobo was trying to drive a wedge between me and my brother.
But Bobo wasn't the problem. The problem was Eddie, and the problem was me, right? It's like, the problem was your ass ain't showering. The problem ain't like Bobo's on the vent talking about fratricide, which is an intellectual joke, right, of between philosophers. He's not a bad guy. He's a good man. But, you know, living with someone in an apartment is difficult enough. But living with someone in a box, like, you need to live, you have to be compatible in a lot of different ways. And me and Eddie aren't compatible. And despite, you know, not being a great brother when I was young, he does his best today to be a good brother. And I appreciate that. But we'll never live together, ever in life, period.
Eventually, Emil moved out of the cell with his brother and moved in with his neighbor, Bobo. And they got along fine. It worked out well. So, Erlan, now that your own cell situation is up in the air, what did you take from that story?
What, the story we just heard?
Yeah.
See, that's the type of shit I'm trying to avoid.
What shit?
That where it's confusion, chaos, and just craziness.
So, what's your biggest fear about finding a cellie?
I have several fears, but one of them is someone that talks too much, that's always talking. Every time you look around, he's talking, talking, talking through the TV shows, talking when you walk in, talking when you get up in the morning. I hate that shit.
Your cellie who just left, Cleo Cloman, who was also known as Black, and from everything you told me, it seemed like he was a really great cellie for you.
Yeah, and I think he feels the same way because I brought him down here and got him on tape right before he left. The first question is, having me as a cellie,
right,
in the time that we spent in that cage, what is your thoughts on me?
Oh, man. I can honestly say first that you as my cellie has been one of the best times of my incarceration. First and foremost, the respect level is 100. It's genuine. This is a place where we lay our head, where we're supposed to be comfortable, where we're supposed to feel comfortable when we take a nap and a place to sleep. And when we wake up, we just do it all over again. And we enjoy each other. And most importantly, we leave the penitentiary out of the cell.
If I was to describe Mr. Cloman over here, I would say he's a well-disciplined person and a great thinker. I know many times I always come to him and be like, hey, man, I need your help on this. And he got this little whiteboard in the cell. Yeah. He'll bust out the little Sharpie marker, the little dry marker, and he'll just get to going. You know, he'll get to whatever issues I'm having problem with. And the brother's well-versed, too, especially when it comes to self-help groups. Yeah. And a smart brother, man, and that's what I get. And he cool, hella cool. I mean, shit, I don't know what I'm going to do when he leaves. To find a brother of your caliber, man, it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
I already know that.
Okay, so Black's gone. You have a new cellie that the prison put in with you. But you're still going to be looking around, right?
Actually, it's a trip because the cellie that I have now is temporary. He's about to leave. I don't want a cellie, but I got to go find one because if I leave it to custody, they'll just throw anybody in the cell with me, somebody that I'm not compatible with. So I have to find someone that I'm compatible with. And then on the other hand, you don't want to tell somebody something that you want to move them in the cell and then you change your mind like, oh, man, I ain't going to be able to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you tell a person, hey, man, what you doing, man? You know, you want to move up, then you'd be like, oh, I'm going to go get this dude over here.
It's really like dating. I mean, some of the things that you talk, I know.
It's not like dating, Nigel.
There are a lot of similarities.
I can't even look at it that way, Nigel.
I knew you wouldn't be able to. That's why I hesitated.
No, but it's a relationship. Yeah. It is a relationship.
Yeah. And so that's why the idea of dating comes up, because there isn't any other time where two adults are expected to live in such close proximity.
So you have to be peaceful. You don't have to talk.
This is what he got over there in Washington. This is the movies he played in. Booty Call.
Jamie Foxx is a better actor.
Bait.
So what?
Listen, man, Booty Call Part 2 with Ricky in it. What was the movie
Ricky,
with Ricky?
Ricky from Boys in the Hood? I don't even know the name of that movie.
What was it? Booty Call Part 2.
That had Gabrielle Union in it.
I know I said I don't like talkers, but Dante and Shy, they are cellies, and they're chopping it up in the way that is totally compatible, totally acceptable. That kind of talking wouldn't bother me.
Yeah, they came down here yesterday and started talking, and we had to pull out the recorder. I mean, I just imagine that's what they're like all the time in their cell.
Yeah, every night they have their top five. Who's the best Black actors? Who's the best basketball players? Who's the best rappers?
Top five, right? Jay-Z and Ja Rule in the same category.
Come on, bro.
Blueprint 2 ain't blood in my eyes, part 2. Blueprint 2 ain't Black Back Part 2.
Those guys clearly get along. They obviously are compatible cellies.
Yep.
And E, I know ideally you really want to live alone.
That I do.
Well, you won't believe this, but on the way in today, when I was walking in, I ran into Ron Self, who was the guy at the top of the podcast who had that cellie from hell.
Right.
And I asked him about his current cell situation, and I wanted to play some tape for you.
Okay.
Well, I don't have a cellie right now. I don't live with anyone. I'm single cell.
That's the best way to live in prison.
How's it make you feel, though?
I mean, it's I'm jealous.
And the reason I'm single cell is because of my ethnicity, which is American Indian. And I have medical issues because surgeries that I've just had neck surgeries, arm surgeries, that prevent me from pulling myself to the top bunk.
I got a shoulder injury and I can't get a bottom bunk.
Man, you cannot catch up to me.
No, I cannot. I have to be Native American, probably.
Yeah, well, okay, so at San Quentin, guys are sold by race. That's a story for another podcast. But Ron apparently has had a single cell for quite some time.
Tell me what it's like to have that 9x4 space to yourself.
Still feels crowded. So I use the top bunk as like a desk, and I have a yoga mat up there, and I just kind of...
But isn't it, I mean, it must actually be a pleasure, if we can use that word for a cell, that you can go back there and you can shut the cell door or whatever, and you can actually be alone in there.
Yeah, it's helped me get in touch with myself in a way that I can go back in there and shut the door and just cry. A lot of guys can't and won't do that because there's no time to be alone here because you're never alone, really. You're surrounded by, 900 people all the time, but you're never alone. Having a single cell for any period of time is just, it's like a brief vacation.
Yeah, I can dig that. That's the life.
So, like, tell me what you're doing now. Like, are you, like, looking around at guys? Are you checking people out? I know, this all sounds like dating.
Yeah, especially just checking people out part, yeah.
So what are you doing now when you're walking around the yard?
Well, this one cat, he's laid back. He's older than me. He's probably, like, 49. Cool dude. You know, he's out the way. He's been locked up, like, 20 years. So a person that's been locked up for a long time gets it. You know, it's a professional prisoner.
So what would the conversation be like with this guy?
What do you mean?
When you pop the question.
Someone said, when I court the guy?
Yeah. That's what you... Yes, yeah, so how are you going to court this guy? And then when do you move to asking that really important question? Will you move in with me?
I'd be like, look here, man. Put my Barry White voice on now. Yeah. Now, I think it's more, she said, pop the question. It's like, what, I'm getting on one knee. Hey, you want to move in with me?
Exactly.
No, it's more like, hey man, look here, man, my celly finna bounce, man. You good where you at? Or you want to move up? You know, that's it.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, modern management made simple. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. Hear a feed from episodes across NPR podcasts that center Black voices. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
And that's it for this episode of Ear Hustle. Our sound designer is Antoine Williams. We also got a few tracks from fellow prisoners David Jazzy and Joshua Burton.
Pat Mesidi Miller is our outside production advisor. Our editor is Curtis Fox.
And our executive producer for Radiotopia is the illustrious Julie Shapiro. We also want to thank Warden Ron Davis. And every episode has to be approved by this guy here.
This is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the public information officer at San Quentin State Prison, and I approve this story.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. Radiotopia is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation.
Hear more at radiotopia.fm. Next time on Ear Hustle, the high price one man paid for loyalty to his gang.
In 1985, I'm in a liquor store, and I see this brother come in, and I say,
"What's that at home, boy?"
And he like,
"What that West Side Rolling 60s like?"
Now, that was the worst thing he could have said to me at that point, because I was at the height of my career as a gangbanger.
Our website is earhustlesq.com. You can find video, photos, and audio extras there.
And you can subscribe to our podcast, sign up for a newsletter, and find out how to send us a question by postcard that we might answer on a future episode.
That's earhustlesq.com.
Nige, Ear Hustle listeners are the best.
They really are. You're always in touch, letting us know what you think about episodes and sharing the love.
Yep, it's really a two-way conversation, a relationship.
Indeed it is. And if you're looking for a way to deepen that relationship, consider signing up for Ear Hustle Plus.
Ear Hustle Plus, it's a new subscription service that delivers bonus Ear Hustle episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
In addition to ad-free episodes of Ear Hustle, subscribers get behind-the-scenes, off-the-cuff conversations.
We have a monthly AMA, which is Ask Me Anything episode, where you and I answer questions sent in by subscribers.
And seriously, no question is too random or wacky.
Questions like, what's our favorite book? Do we hang out in between seasons? What's the most technically challenging Ear Hustle episode ever?
Okay, Erlon, yeah, those are good questions, but like we said above, I'd like some wackier ones, actually.
We've also started doing episode commentary, where you and I listen to a classic Ear Hustle episode and talk about how it came together, hard decisions made along the way, and where the people in the episodes are now.
Yeah, we did that for Sellies, and it was a lot of fun, so we're definitely going to do more. And Erlon, tell them about that idea you're working on.
Sure. I've been sitting down with some of our formerly incarcerated friends who have gotten out and are doing well. Just basically showing how they went from one situation to a better situation, if that makes sense. Those will start dropping in the Ear Hustle Plus feed soon.
Listeners, we want you in this conversation. Find out more about Ear Hustle Plus at earhustlesq.com/plus or subscribe right now in the Apple Podcast Player app.
That's earhustlesq.com/plus or right in the Apple Podcast Player.
So, what is your favorite book, Erlon?
Sorry, Nige. You got to subscribe for that.
Really?
Yes.
Radiotopia.